Lead UX, the User Experience Leadership Circle, hosted by Dr. Thomas Führinger-Kuhnt. With my guest today, I chat about role models for leaders, especially in the area of user experience, what you can do as a business unit leader to help and make your team leaders and the team members grow, which skills you need to have as team leader and how you can learn them to make your team shine in the organization. Of course, we also tackle topics like misconceptions about UX, which are very common in many organizations still, how you can overcome them, and which KPIs you can use to show and tell the value of UX design work. Finally, we also touch topics which are more practical, like design systems, patterns, and tools, and how research can help to find the right solutions for the problems we've defined in the beginning of the process. So enjoy listening to this episode. All right, then warm welcome to another episode of the Lead UX, the UX Leadership Circle podcast, your compass for navigating the ever-evolving landscape of UX leadership and UX maturity in organizations. My guest today is Jacek Popko. He's head of Digital Solutions Business Unit at Macrolab. So thank you and welcome to the show, Jacek. Great to have you.
Thanks, Thomas, for the invite. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, sure. So could you first of all introduce yourself to our listeners and describe a bit of your current job role and tasks?
Yeah, so to make the long story short, by heart, I'm a UX slash product slash business designer. So what I do mostly is I do my best to intersect perspectives of users, technology, and voice of business also. On a daily basis, I work with other business units at Macrolab to support them with ideation and evaluation of digital products. I've been in the HCI field for more than 20 years now, so I guess it makes me a bit of a dinosaur. But still, I believe there is a lot to learn also for me.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, that's why I'm more than happy to talk to you to, you know, pick your brain and get insights and benefit from your experience. So what motivates you to get up in the morning and work in the HCI or UX field?
So I think a few years ago, it used to be the challenge. So trying to solve some problems and tackle whatever was needed on the go. And now it's more about working with teams and motivating people and making sure that the project runs smoothly. So now as I see my team leaders grow and change when it comes to not just the hard skills, but also the soft skills which are needed for the team to grow, I think that's something even more powerful that I initially thought UX would be for me, actually. So it's no longer just ideation or paper prototyping or basically shaping the product, but also learning about the human part of it in terms of organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. And so to what are then specific soft skills and competences from your point of view for a good UX leader?
I was asking this question to myself many a time, like what really makes a leader, respectively, in this field? And a few years ago, I remember I was asked, like, who is your role model for a leader, maybe? Like, Is it a Winston Churchill type of guy, or maybe more Barack Obama, or who is this role model for leadership? And I remember I had a hard time trying to find the answer because I couldn't pick one figure and say, okay, this is the guy or this is the girl, whatever. But I think the quality that resonates with me most is the servant leader idea. I know that it's not yet popular in many cultures which are hierarchical, but for flattened organizations where there are not many levels of hierarchy, and the teams are really working closely in terms of all the skills that are needed there, I think that the role of the leader and thus the quality is to make sure that one can lead by showing certain behaviors in the zero moment of truth. So there is consistency, like not just this leadership by maybe reaching out for a book and saying, okay, those are the rules that we follow, but maybe trying to show it on a day-to-day basis. So I think there is a, when I think of the perspective of a servant leader, I'm thinking, okay, what can I do as a business unit leader to make my team leaders grow? What is it? How can I help them? And I've came across a couple of different tools looking from HR perspective, such as the Gallup talent tool, which allows organizations to understand a little bit what specific sort of soft skill any given person has. And I believe that there are other tools like that, but at least it makes sense to understand, okay, we're all different, so let's see how we can use this diversity to shape the strengths. And I believe in shaping strengths, not in trying to maybe forge everyone into this one type of specific leader who needs to have this and that. I mean, for sure, leaders need to have the drive for leading. It's impossible to become a leader without the drive. So the drive needs to be there. But does the drive mean that the leader needs to take over? I don't think so.
I get this point of servant leadership, and this has been something I thought about also since quite a while. To my experience in teams, there are usually different types of employees. So do you think everybody in the team is really or can value this kind of servant leadership?
I don't think so. I think that it requires a set of skills that fortunately can be learned. So it's doable to become a leader in thinking about it from this angle. But it takes some skills to grow, like maybe the skill of active listening and really keeping an open mind, not judging people with trying to find some one size fits all criteria for good or bad leadership. At the same time, I think that a lot of UX people share this sense of fragility or maybe a very easy skill of empathizing with others. And this is what also builds a great leader, I would say, because it allows you to more or less put yourself in the shoes of others and see, okay, so how this is working as an interaction in terms of human-to-human exchange. And apart from active listening, I think that there are many skills with regards to understanding how people, depending on their various inner talents, how they value specific, I would say, qualities. So let's take an example, like suppose you are a leader and you were selected a leader, and there is a team of five that you're about to lead. Now, what do you know exactly about those people? What motivates them? How to talk with them so that they more or less feel comfortable in this dialogue? Each and every one of us, we are all different in a way, and we all have our qualities, our values, and it takes a lot of sensibility to step into this field and remain comfortable, and at the same time have this good human exchange with others that are invited into the project. So I believe there is no specific pattern, like is a user researcher a better fit for a leader than a designer? I don't think so. But I think that a good fit is a good listener who understands diversity. And then once she or he understands that there will be different roles in the team, and some of people will be stars, some of them will be workers, there will be different styles of leadership that the people will appreciate, this and that. So this is the soft skill that I'm thinking of.
Mm. Yeah, and you mentioned that as UXers, we are used to put ourselves in the shoes of others. It's from my experience, this is also important in regards to understanding the needs of your stakeholders. So the team is one topic, but the requirements you need to fulfill in terms of, you know, managing expectations with other stakeholders in the organization is also, I think, really something UX leadership needs to accomplish. So maybe we can change gear here a little bit and talk about more of, about the organizational side of things. What's your experience with managing expectations from stakeholders outside the core UX team?
Yeah, so I'm really glad that we're talking about this, because it feels like a lot of organizations today are siloed in this or other way. And there are some common misconceptions about what UX is, really. And those misconceptions are more or less equally shared among other units or silos. I think the most basic misconception is that UX is about visual design, and that this is it. But I guess there are a lot of different actors on the market trying to change that wave, and publishing on LinkedIn and so forth. But still, I feel like it's quite a challenge to share the knowledge and build the understanding of what UX really is. Because most people, when asked, they more or less understand what software development is. And as for UX, this is not very widely distributed. So I think the first challenge is to make sure that UX is properly understood. And then, apart from understanding what it is, it's also understanding what is the benefit of it? Why even bother to do it? Because everyone can see the P&L, everyone can see the cost of it. But how does it add value, actually? And I think that profits such as bringing the conversion ratio higher, or turning the churn rates lower, or saving time, this and that, they are much more tangible than just saying about, okay, this interface is more pleasant than the other one. And this is the those are the conversations that I think need to be done with a lot of silos in many organizations. So at least we can defend UX as not a cost driver, but actually a profit driver or savings driver for the organization. So this is the, I think this is the core issue, actually. And then once we are over that, then it's a bit easier to get a bit of buy-in into whatever type of UX this team or unit are doing. From my experience, a lot of software developers do not have any even basic training into what UX is. I think that it's due to fact of how programs at universities are being set up, and that IT is actually not including, I mean, most of the IT studies are not including human factors in the software design. And many of business unit directors and line managers, they come exactly from this field. They come from software engineering. First, we need to build some sort of understanding, then understand what is the value, and then we can jump into, okay, let's try to understand how we can streamline processes, how we can make sure that UX has a voice at the table. What is the good outcome of that? And then we can build some first case studies, maybe share some lighthouse project, and then it's getting better and better adopted. So that's my experience. That's what I have seen.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some certain KPIs like conversion mm-hmm. rate and stuff. Can you share a bit more details about other maybe KPIs you will apply to raise awareness for actually the use of UX methods?
Yeah, I think that other important KPIs are reduced time or reduced number of errors. So at least in the software development domain, there is always an outlook on those numbers, and they are always somehow measured across the software development lifecycle. I mean, maybe not for all the products, but those are the ones that are tracked, at least. So the whenever we think about completion rate or the success rate when it comes to task-oriented interaction design, I think that those are the operational KPIs. And when we are thinking about business-level KPIs, it's more about the growth of the customer lifetime value, the retention of the customer, maybe the individual net worth of transaction. Those are the KPIs that I've come across in my work.
Mm. And do you also apply certain quality gates for UX-related KPIs? Like, are there certain showstoppers that would stop a project from being delivered if a certain UX KPI is not measured? Or are those more like targets that are nice to have but are not mandatory?
Well, actually, the KPIs that I've mentioned just a moment ago serve as a component of success criteria for the entire project. So maybe the showstopper is more of an operational KPI related to ergonomy. So if we don't pass WCAG, then we cannot go on production. So it's like this. But when you are thinking about business-oriented KPIs, like maybe conversion ratio, this is always subject to continuous improvement. There is no such thing in the digital product lifecycle as a finished product. It's you just have releases. So what we are doing is we are doing our best to make sure that release over release, it gets better. And so that the initial conversion ratio is not actually a green light for the project or a key situation for the project. But I would say that it's a marker, and then we can look at it and see how it improves over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. So if we think about reaching next maturity level in terms of, you know, measuring those KPIs, mm-hmm. and acceptance of those KPIs in a broader development team. If you think about some maturity models that are out there, so how long do you think it takes really for a company to establish the next step in UX maturity?
Well, but I think it depends on where you start from. But suppose you're building from scratch, I would say any span between 2 to 3 years is necessary to make sure that you have at least certain frameworks and mode of operations for teams and synchronization between the teams, so that in the end, everyone understands how are we doing actually, because The trouble that I see mostly is that the design framework is there and the software development framework is there. But where is the analytics framework on top of that? It's most cases it doesn't exist. It's just some disparate unit which is doing some analysis for top management on a irregular basis. It just sometimes happens. Well, sometimes there are some monthly reports, this and that. But there is a certain disconnection between watching at all the parameters of the solution, business KPIs, and connection between UX roles and software development roles, quality engineering, and business. I see a huge gap there. It's not a cycle. So for me, the next level is actually to achieve for any digital product sort of a loop, which is an infinite process, but including all of those functions that I mentioned before. So UX, development, analytics, business. Then if you manage to have a process where on a weekly basis, you can look at the data and based on that data, take a decision where to go next. That's something. But I've only seen it a couple of times. So that's why I think this is the next level of maturity.
Mm, yeah. So we talked now a long time about actual development projects. If you think mm-hmm. about innovations, mm-hmm. do you think a certain UX maturity level is important for a company to develop better innovations?
Yes. I think, given the low barrier of the current design tools, like 10 years ago, it was really quite hard to enter the domain. And now it's fairly easy to start working with Figma. There is a number of tutorials. There is a number of courses on UX and interaction design. I mean, the pace at which this is moving is absolutely fascinating. And when I look at the pace at which Figma, FigJam, all the AI plugins, everything that is happening there, the pace that it picked up actually results in a situation where sometimes the junior designers, in terms of junior interaction design skills, become senior designers in terms of visual design over senior that have been in the field for many for a long time, actually, because of the capabilities with the tool. So I think that the next big thing for organizations is not exactly related to tools itself, but to make sure that the process of elaborating innovation includes the research and the evaluation phase. Those are the two phases where we haven't gained much benefit in the last 2 or 3 years. The design and good design and atomic design systems, all of that are becoming a commodity now. I would even risk a thesis that within 3 to 5 years, we will see a lot of AI-based designs created very fast, very rapidly, because really there is a number of patterns that we can use machine learning to learn from, and those will be frighteningly good designs, I suppose, in a couple of years. But still, it doesn't solve the question of pinpointing the user pain and saying, okay, we need to fix this pain, not the other. So I think user research and validation of any prototype that comes up to the market, the validation not just of the UX part of the prototype, but also of the market value proposal. Like, okay, what is the pricing of it? What is the quality of delivery? What is the any other qualities which are with regards to the whole customer experience, right? So long story short, I believe that UX is crucial, but not in terms of visual design. I see that becoming more and more as a commodity, thus thinking that the core component that needs to be taken care of is the core of UX, which is interaction design, actually.
Mm-hmm. So if I understand you correctly, you say that the what and the how of designing interactive products is standardized, but we lack still research to answer the question why we develop certain solutions, right?
Yeah, I think it's the hardest question to get the answer for. And this is where most companies struggle, actually, because there is no golden hammer for that. You just need to go and find out by trial, actually.
Mm. Yeah. On the other hand, if you think of UX research, there are also certain standards how we would conduct user clinics and stuff like that. Yeah. So oftentimes, in my experience, it's just a lack of using those tools that we actually also have for UX research, right?
Yeah, I think that it's due to fact that maybe user research findings are not so pleasant visually to showcase in the organization. And the assets, the deliverables, are actually harder to market internally and to show, okay, it really makes sense to invest in this, because the people who are really excited about that are just UXers. I haven't even seen any business people really excited about, okay, let's do some interviews and find out.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's also my experience, right? So we need to, again, put ourselves in the shoes of the management and present our research results in a way that, yeah, they can also benefit and understand the value of it. So now if we broaden the view a bit and think about attracting talent to organizations. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that nowadays it's easy to enter the UX field, definitely easier than it was 10, yeah, 15, or even 20 years ago, for sure. But now we rather have the situation that we need talent to enter our organizations and also to keep them in our companies. So what do you think, or from your experience, what is needed for organizations to attract talented UXers and also keep them?
Yeah, so I would say that depending on the role of the organization, because if the organization is a sort of software house or a digital agency, then mostly what I hear from my leaders and on recruitment calls is that it's the variety of projects and quality of projects. So designers obviously want an interesting challenge to work on. And this is the much appreciated factor here. Now, looking at that from product companies' perspective, that's a bit different, because most of the product companies, they already have some sort of exciting product that could be enhanced somehow by the digital experience, maybe. Or maybe the digital experience is 90% of the experience. But still, the product is there. So what counts, it's not just about the product itself or how exciting the project is, but also how this will be managed. And actually, some of the designers, they say, okay, I really like the recruitment process because I not only got to talk to managers, but I also got to talk to the team with whom I'll be working with. And then I could more or less see what are those people, and we could even barely, but see, okay, there is a fit and we feel comfortable talking to each other. Maybe we talk common language or maybe not. So it really saves a lot of effort, a lot of pain to maybe not suffer being somewhere for a month or two before we realize that the team is absolutely not how you wanted it to be and you need to escape as a designer. So So basically project and team validation. I think that coming back again to the idea of servant leader, I think that most designers are very much interested into how they will be treated in a team. Will the UX role or the UX talent be appreciated in the organization? Or maybe it has to fight its own way and prove that it's worthy of being at the table, so to speak. So I think it's the level of adoption of UX, the level of maturity. Is it just a small organization with maybe a few UX roles, or maybe it already has a lot of practices, a lot of different teams? That depends. But I would say those three things. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you see special challenges for companies when now younger people, Gen Z, are entering the job market? So what I experience in job interviews is that yeah, they ask for topics that you just mentioned, but also for other benefits that I personally would not have focused on when I entered the job market. So do you think there are special challenges with Gen Z employees?
Well, I think that the challenge is that basically a difference between the current generation of managers and Gen Z, maybe. Like, I know that it's a stereotype, but still, let's make it useful for the purpose of the conversation. So, yes, I think there are important factors for Gen Z that I couldn't see for my generation, and I wouldn't dare to ask at an interview many years ago. But also, that's quite interesting. I had one employee, and upon interview, she asked, could she have flexible hours, but only on Thursdays? And I asked, okay, could you elaborate on this a little bit? And she said, well, on Thursdays, I take care of my grandmother. And I would like to spend some more time with her because it feels like I know that she will pass away sometime soon. And then I realized, okay, so maybe this is the generation that realized that the value of relationship between people is really a very important value, and maybe they want to have this connection over some salary terms or over some other benefits that maybe my generation could see fit. There were some other concerns, like, what are we doing with paper that we use for paper prototyping? Is it recycled or is it just discarded? So those are the kind of the questions that I wouldn't ask myself being interviewed 20 years ago, definitely not. But I think those are valid questions, given the current context.
Yeah, that's a super touching story, that you mentioned. Also, resonates with my experience in job interviews. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, to sum up, do you have any recommendations now for people entering, not entering the UX job market, but more growing into management positions? Is there something you would like to have known 10 years ago, or any other insights you can give to our listeners?
Well, I think there is a number of good advice all around, and starting with Jobs' famous stay hungry, stay foolish, which applies here also, because I believe that we can never stop learning about culture and about the quality of interaction between us as humans, as you are just illustrating that with the generation gap differences. And I think this is valid. And there is one more thing. There is a number of tools that are out there. It's not just us UXers that have the right tools for the job. HR departments, growth departments, they also have their tools. It's really worth listening to them and learning, okay, how can we use that? There is a number of learning that we could use from software development. Agile Manifesto is now, 20 years old or something like this, and still it remains so valid it's touching how many of its theses of the points remain still untouched in the UX field, so to speak. So I would encourage to step out of the comfort zones, to step out of the UX zone once in transition to a leadership role, to look broader, to look into the domain of software engineering, to look into the domain of HR, maybe to look into the domain of business as it is, to understand the context better, but also to have a better toolbox because it's a different responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super cool. So thank you, Jacek, for all those insights. I think this has been really super valuable. And yeah, thanks a lot for giving us letting us learn from your experience. And it was really great talking to you today. Thanks for being my guest. And yeah, all the best for your future endeavors at Macrolab. Yeah, and maybe see you soon at one UX conference or something like that.
Thanks, Thomas. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.